The Navigators is an international, interdenominational Christian organization whose objective is to help fulfill Christ's commission to make disciples of all nations. They individually teach the basics of the Christian life to new believers, who then teach others. They work on campuses, military bases, and among lay men and women on every continent.
We live in an interesting age. It's in the age of the expert. There are experts in every field. And because of that, I think that you and I often tend to get intimidated. We're a little bit afraid to trust our own good common sense in a lot of arenas. And we run to an expert so that the expert can instruct us. Now, I'm not an expert, and I don't ever want to be. And I don't think we necessarily need experts. A lot of times people say, well, I'm poorly prepared to be a parent. My parents never trained me. I think all of us can usually say that. That's the case with most of us. But it seems to me that our sovereign God, because he's a gracious God, has stacked the deck in our favor. Not just the believing community, but the whole world. It really seems to me that it would be unfair for God to give you and me the capacity to reproduce biologically, to be parents, and then to keep all that good information from us so that we couldn't raise those little critters. That just doesn't seem to be consistent with the character of God. So I think that intuitively, in an elemental sense, we have enough information to get started. And then if we're responsible, if we're willing to learn, we can pick it up as we go along. So my desire would be to motivate you to dig a lot of it out on your own. You have the greatest manual in the world in child raising. It's fantastic. And you can dig it out all by yourself. You have enough good common sense to start with. And all you need to be is responsible and teachable. And you'll learn. Oftentimes I'll talk with some of the young couples that are where I am. They'll be having a problem in a given area, and I'll say, well, now, didn't you think when that first occurred? And they said, well, yeah, but we just weren't sure that that was the way to do it. But they had the right idea to start with. And then they go off on some screwball tangent because they buy a book by some expert. And the expert, oh, I couldn't believe it. I was riding in the airplane yesterday. A young divorcee sitting next to me. How to potty train in one day. I wish it were that easy. It's not all that hard, but boy, getting it one day. If you can potty train them in one day, it's fantastic. There are not that many kids that'll pick it up in one day. But there are all kinds of books by experts on how to do this in one day and how to do that in one day. How to solve all your problems in one day. And life just is not that simple. All right, problems in parenting. First problem is confusing concepts of leadership. Confusing concepts of leadership. Either getting hung up in being an authoritarian type leader or taking the Dr. Spock approach and becoming a permissive type leader rather than the delicate balance necessary in being a responsible leader and being an authoritarian type leader when authoritarianism is necessary and permissiveness when permissiveness is necessary. Man told me one time, he said, Lewis, it is always easy to maintain balance in the position of extreme. And that is so true. If I'm going to be strictly an authoritarian type leader, it's easy to be balanced. Or if I'm going to run all the way to the other extreme, to be permissive, it's easy to be balanced. For me. But to learn how to use various styles of leadership as my kids are growing up requires a lot of thinking, risk, failure. Learning. In the scriptures, I think, probably the classic illustrations would be in the permissive category, whether it would be with Eli and his children, and I'm sure you've all read the passages where he would not restrain his kids, and the scriptures say that he honored his kids above the Lord. And boy, I meet parents like that all the time, Christian parents who honor their kids above the Lord. Samuel had the same problem. David had the same problem. In fact, in the scriptures, it's just illustration after illustration after illustration of parents who sort of fell down on the job. just because they wouldn't be responsible. And often it's in the area of being permissive, letting them do whatever they want to do. Another problem in raising kids is confusing interest. Confusing leadership, confusing interest. Interest confused in three areas, or three ways. Number one, disinterest. Kids are a drag. Easiest way to take care of them is get them in a daycare center. Let the professionals raise them for me. Gives me then a chance to go out and utilize my spiritual gift to the glory of Jesus. Hallelujah. And we laugh and we think that's ridiculous. And men and women, I have seen that in print today by Christian leaders who advocate that as a legitimate concept, a legitimate use of your spiritual gift. And it's going to be growing from that point. So it's not all that funny. It's sad. Disinterest. Let me read you a little poem. "They tie you down," a woman said, "whose cheeks should have been flaming red with shame to speak of children so. When babies come, you cannot go in search of pleasure with your friends, and all your happy wandering ends. The things you like to do, you cannot do, for babies make a slave of you." You ever heard anybody say that? I've heard lots of women say that. I've heard a lot of men say that. Babies make a slave out of you. I looked at her and said, "'Tis true that children make a slave of you and tie you down with many a knot. But have you never thought to what it is of happiness and pride that little babies have you tied? Do you not miss the greater joys that come with little girls and boys? They tie you down to laughter rare, to hours of smiles and hours of care, to nights of watching and to fears. Sometimes they tie you down to tears and then repay you with a smile and make your trouble all worthwhile. They tie you fast to chubby feet and chinks of pink and kisses sweet. They fasten you with cords of love to God divine who reigns above. They tie you wheresoe'er you roam into a little place called home. And oversee your railroad track, they tug at you to bring you back. The happiest people in the town are those babies have tied down. Oh, go your selfish way and free, but hampered I would rather be, yes, rather than a kingly crown, I would be what you term tied down. Held fast by chubby, dimpled arms, the fettered slave of girl and boy, and win from them earth's finest joy." Now, a lot of people really are disinterested in their kids. Leave them alone. Push them away. Let somebody else take care of them. Turn with me to Proverbs 29:15. Proverbs 29:15. "The stick and the reprimand bestow wisdom. A child left to himself brings shame on his mother." The phrase there is, a child pushed away brings shame to his mother. I often wondered, why in the world does it say bring shame to his mother, not his dad? It seems to me one of the reasons is that the dad really doesn't care. So he's not even aware of what's going on. Mothers usually are aware and concerned, and she's the one who experiences a lot of the shame. A child pushed away, a child left to himself or herself, brings his mother to shame. Why? Because a child left to himself or herself is going to end up arrogant, selfish, stubborn, willful. Because those sweet little critters come into the world evil, wicked. They come into the world having to learn how to love, having to learn how to be humble. Those are learned. And self has got to die to acquire those characteristics. So when you leave the little critter alone, you feed the natural nature and they end up being that way. And that's why the scriptures say, don't leave the child to himself or herself. You need the rod and reproof. Bible says don't do that. So my first no-no is, do not live your life without your child. Don't embrace disinterest. The second part of confusing interest is too much interest. This particular difficulty is characterized by the martyr mother. She's just spending her whole life for her little sweetlings there. No time for hubby, pouring herself out for the kids. If we were to use the navigator wheel illustration, often these families are characterized by being child-centered. The children demand every moment of your attention. And mom will just pour herself out for those kids. She doesn't realize she's losing dad. And when the kids are gone and they're empty nesters, now she's stuck with him and she doesn't know it. Other than the guy who brings home the money, or the guy who comes home with a club when she says, when she can no longer handle the children her way, wait till your dad comes home. What a way to grow up with your kids. It is illegitimate to live your life solely for your children. Too much interest. That's not right. And number three, a perverted interest. Vicariously trying to relive your life through your kids. And I'm sure we've all met people like that. Trying to live their lives through their kids. Don't try to relive your life through your kids. You were never able to be a majorette. You always wanted to be a majorette. And by thunder, your daughter's going to be a majorette if it kills her. I'd never do that. Many, many people do. Don't try to live your life through your kids. Don't try to live it for them would be another one. Third problem is fear of failure. Confusing leadership, confusing interest, fear of failure. I was poorly prepared to be a parent. I don't want to have kids till I know how to raise them. I don't want to swim till I know how to swim. Learn to trust your good common sense. Believe that God is on your side. And He really is. Do not be afraid of mistakes. So there's a little ditty I teach my kids, and it goes like this. From the ashes of failure grow the roses of success. Don't be afraid to fail. Just don't make the same failure 500 times in a row. It's kind of frustrating. Learn from your mistakes. Most of all, just be convinced that God is on your side. And He really is. He wants to teach you how to be a good parent. Another problem, confusion of goals. First off, not having a goal. If you have children, what is your goal in raising them? Have you thought it through? What are you aiming at? If you aim at nothing, you hit it. You ought to have a goal. You ought to know exactly what you're aiming at. All too often, most parents don't. No goal, you're letting the kids decide their goal. And you're letting them make that decision when they're real young. I think that's wrong. Or letting others decide the goal. Grandma, granddad, neighbors, whatever. And another one along with the goal, in endeavoring to relive your life through your kids, selecting the goal that you wanted and were frustrated at attaining prior, so now you want your kids to go for that goal. I'll suggest to you later on a legitimate, what I consider to be a legitimate biblical goal that you ought to have for your kids. Attainable. Another problem, being unwilling to listen. Generally because you're too busy with your own thing. More often, it's because you're just too lazy. Listening is hard work. And you just don't want to expend the time and the energy necessary to listen. For instance, people who are engaged in counseling, when they really work at listening, at the end of a day, they are extremely tired. And you say, how do you get so tired just listening to people? You're just sitting on your big behind. And you're sort of nodding your head and saying, You're sitting there nodding your head saying, You ain't listening. Listening's hard work. It not only requires your ears, it requires your eyes, and requires your mind. The other day, my daughter Suzanne, our youngest one, was saying something to me. She said, Daddy, you ain't listening to me. I said, yes, I am. She was over here. And she said, Daddy, you're not looking at me. I can't hear without looking at her. Not only is she saying something verbally, she's saying something non-verbally with that little old body of hers. And so I got to use my eyes to communicate with her and for her to communicate with me. Listening is hard work, and oftentimes we just don't want to work that hard. In other problems, an improper concept of authority. We just have come through an age, I think, or an era, where the word authority was anathema. Bad word. We don't like that idea of authority. Mercy. We're all under authority. Whether it's your boss, your peers, the world, we have to learn how to live with it. Not to be afraid of it. Be the proper authority for your children that they need. You learn how to live under authority yourself. Yeah, faulty concept of love is another one. A faulty concept of love, confusing sensate or the senses with the will, remembering that love is the determined act of the will that seeks the other's highest good. And then the last one I have listed is a faulty concept of freedom, believing that you can have rights without responsibilities or freedom without fences. Okay, I've got 10 principles I'd like to share with you. Number one, begin early. When it comes to being a good parent, it starts before the children are on the scene. And it starts with you as an individual and then you as a couple. Get yourself under control. You want to raise children that nurture in the admonition of the Lord? You want to raise children that are disciplined? Then you get disciplined yourself. Can you just imagine yourself in the years ahead saying, "Well, honey, do as I say, not as I do." His dad's a Pharisee, or mom's a Pharisee. Get yourself under control. You be disciplined physically. You be disciplined spiritually. Pray for those kids before they arrive. And a little later on, I'll share some things that you can pray for them, specifically. Begin in the cradle. Begin when they're in the cradle. It's not too soon. One of the classics, at least from my vantage point, you set their routine in the cradle rather than letting them set it. You establish their routine rather than letting them establish your routine. The other day, my wife was out purchasing some clothes from one of our foster kids. She was standing at a counter. There was a 60-year-old black woman there with her husband. They're 60 or 65. She was purchasing some baby things also. My wife thought it was kind of strange that she was there. She said, "Well, are you buying those for your daughter?" She says, "Oh, no, they're for our kids." And this black couple were also taking in foster children. They had a little baby. And they had a whole raft of little babies. And the girl at the counter who was helping this woman said, "Well, how do you put up with it at your age?" She said, "Good night, getting up all night long and the whining and everything else. How do you stand it?" And the black woman says, "Well, mercy, they sleep the night through. No problem." And the woman that was the cashier behind the counter, she said, "Well, I wish someone would tell my daughter that." And this black woman reached across the counter, touched this white woman on the hand, said, "Dearie, someone ought to tell you that." My point is, you set the routine. "Well, they'll cry all night long." No, they won't. They get tired and go to sleep. You do. No, that's if you're not nursing. If you're nursing, it's something else. I'm saying now if you're not nursing. Okay, begin early. You get your mental attitude set that you are going to capitalize on opportunities to develop your children to the glory of God. I mentioned that my wife and I come from divergent backgrounds. Her parents were tremendously permissive. She was an only child. After our first son arrived on the scene, some months into the mission, she said, "Boy," she said, "you just look for him to make a mistake all the time." I said, "Wife, you're getting it." "I do. I don't want to let them go by. I want to train myself to see all of them. Now, I don't work on all of them at once, but I want to see it all." so I can begin working on some of it, rather than just let them grow naturally. Because men and women, the only thing in this creation that grows naturally is weeds. Isn't that true? Everything else needs to be cultivated. You got to cultivate wheat. You let weeds grow naturally. If I want my kids to turn out to be wheat, to use that analogy, I have to cultivate it. Now let me give you something you can pray for yourself. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 11 and 12. Even a child is known by his acts, whether they be good or bad. The hearing ear and the seeing eye, even the Lord hath made both of them. You pray and ask God for a hearing ear and a seeing eye. God help me see. God help me hear. Number two, be patient. Be patient. Rome wasn't built in a day. Kids aren't developed in a day. Ecclesiastes 11:1, cast your bread on the water. It'll come back. 1 Corinthians 15:58, your labor is not in vain. Takes time. Remember that you're aiming for their adult years. You're aiming for their adult years. Don't expect them to be adults at 7, at 5, or 9. You learn. Keep that in mind. You're always aiming for their adult years. You want them to be responsible adults when they're adults. Remember that the process is fraught with failure. There are going to be all kinds of failures. You have to steel yourself to that mentality. Along with this idea of being patient, part of that is just to have a good sense of humor. Because those failures are going to get to be legion sometimes. And you have to learn to laugh at it. Laugh your way through it. Let me give you a couple for instances. I was speaking at a conference like this down in the South. And just as I finished speaking, a fellow walks up and hands me a message. Call your wife. I thought, good night, the house is on fire. And I rush out to the nearest payphone, dial my wife. Honey, what's wrong? She's weeping. Oh, she's upset. I said, what's wrong? She said, Andrew threw my watch away. I'll kill him. He did what? Andrew was one of our boys. One of Andrew's chores then was the emptying of the trash. The trash can sat next to the sewing machine. And my wife, as her habit is, would take her watch off and lay it on the edge of the sewing machine. Somehow, she had inadvertently bumped the sewing machine and the watch went plunk into the trash can. Andrew, as his custom was, would come up, get that trash can, collect the trash in the house, take it outside, dump it in the garbage can. She says, why didn't he look through there and find my watch? I said, well, honey, it's very simple. Months and months ago, when we told Andrew to carry out the trash, one of the things we tried to get him to stop doing was playing in the trash. You teach them how to carry the trash out, and they're always wanting to go through it, find all those treasures. He's having a wonderful time in the trash. They never get their chores done. So we said, don't do that. Carry it out and throw it in the trash can. Yes, sir. And there went the watch. That's just part of it. My little daughter, Suzanne, she wanted to help me one day. I was working on the car. So she gets a piece of sandpaper. And she's sandpapering the side of the car. I wanted to help you, Dad. Thanks. Oh, dear. So you're just going to have to learn how to see the humor and all those kind of things. Remember this. Live your life for living things. Not inanimate things. Live your life for living things. That car is going to rust. I ain't taking that car to heaven. That watch won't go to heaven. And whatever else it is, none of that stuff's going to go to heaven. People are. So live your life for living things. The next one, be in faith. Begin early, be patient, be in faith. Hebrews 11:13. Now these all died in faith, not having received the promise, but having seen it afar off, and were persuaded of it, and embraced it, confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims. Hebrews 12:11. The little phrase there, nevertheless afterward. You want to develop in your children these qualities. And it's going to be a long time, in many cases, before you see those qualities come to fruit in their life. You have to continue building, not seeing a return immediately, but knowing that you're going to see it on into the future. I get motivated when I think of the fellow that led me to Christ and all the things that he built in my life. And during much of that period, I was not a willing pupil. I was a stubborn, still am, stubborn pupil. But those good qualities he built in my life by precept and practice bore fruit in later years. And because of his faithfulness to Jesus Christ, I'm where I am today with my family and my walk with God. It bears fruit. And he was committed to it. I saw him for the first time in 22 years this summer. Hadn't seen him since I left that boy's farm. And when I left that boy's farm, I wasn't even in fellowship with God. And I know that hurt him. And I went out to see him again this summer for the first time. It was almost like going to heaven. And I had a chance to thank him personally for all the things that he'd done for me. For the building in faith that he had done. And how it was bearing fruit in later years. And the same will be true in your life. Without faith, it's impossible to please God. Without faith, it's impossible to raise kids. Take your Bible, Proverbs 17, verse 6. I came across this one a few years ago, and it's motivated me ever since. Proverbs 17, verse 6. This is out of the Jerusalem. The crown of the aged is their children's children. The children's glory is their father. King James, I think, says, children's children are the crown of old men, and the glory of children is their father. It is illegitimate for you and me to wear our children as our badge, as a badge. Parents often do that. They'll say, you want to hear Junior quote the TMS? Junior, come here. Come here. Junior quote the TMS. Isn't that sweet? Isn't that sweet? Junior do this, Junior do that. You do that with your dogs and cats. And you have a performance relationship with your dogs and cats. If you do that with your kids, you run the risk of having the same kind of a relationship. Now, there's nothing wrong in having Junior quote the TMS or do these other things, but to perform like that, be very careful. It seems to me when I see parents do that, they're wearing their kids as a badge. That's bad news. Because then you're building for time, not eternity. The Bible says children's children are the crown of old men. That means you wear your grandchildren as a badge. Now you imagine how that'll motivate your son or your daughter when you're wearing their kids as a badge. That'll make them swell up with all kinds of pride. And you're in the role of a coach then. But my point is, you're building for the future when you're motivated that way. And you'll see the proof of all this worked out in your kids. Children's children are the crown of old men. Then you let your kids wear you as the badge. And the glory of children is their father. It's all right for kids to say, boy, look at my dad. Look at my mom. That's okay. But don't you wear your children as a badge. You build for the future and wait until you can wear their children as your badge. Okay, the next one. Discipline representatively. And I don't use the word discipline in the sense of punishment. I differentiate between discipline and punishment. So discipline is the process of child raising. Discipline representatively. Always remember that you stand in the place of God for your children. Now, I don't tell the kids that. That's to motivate me. I'm the priest in the family. the pontifex, the bridge builder. I represent God to my kids and my kids to God, just like Job. The next principle would be discipline exemplarily. You know, as an example. One of those hard words. I know you've all seen that little poem or read it that says, I'd rather see a sermon than to hear one any day. I'd rather one should show me than merely tell the way. Be an example. Edmund Burke said that example wasn't just a way to teach, it's the only way to teach. Men and women, whether you like it or not, whether I like it or not, our lives are always on display. Always. Somebody is always watching you. For good or ill, for the glory of God or for the devil, your life is always on display. You ought to think about that. You ought to motivate yourself with that idea. You're always being watched. Let me read you another poem. There are little eyes upon you, and they're watching night and day. There are little ears that quickly take in every word you say. There are little hands all eager to do everything you do, and a little boy is dreaming of the day he'll be like you. You're the little fella's idol. You're the wisest of the wise. In his little mind about you, no suspicions ever rise. He believes in you devoutly, holds all that you say and do. He will say and do in your way when he's grown up, just like you. Oh, it sometimes makes me shudder when I hear my boy repeat some careless phrase I've uttered in the language of the street. And it sets my heart to grieving when some little fault I see, and I know beyond all doubting that he picked it up from me. There's a wide-eyed little fellow who believes you're always right, and his ears are always open, and he watches day and night. You are setting an example every day in all you do for the little boy who's waiting to grow up to be like you. Now, that's not true just with your own children. That's true with people all around you. I was traveling south one time through Virginia, and I stopped to get a cup of coffee late at night. It's about 11:30, and I went into McDonald's, and I'm standing at that line, minding my own business. I ain't bothering a soul. Just sitting there thinking, watching the girls work, and waiting my turn. And all of a sudden, some young lady walks right in front of me, stands right there, nose almost nose to nose, and she says, what verse you working on? And it turned out later on, I got to talk to her, that she had been at some conference I was at, and I had used this phrase, if you ever see me anywhere, you just walk up to me and ask me what verse I'm working on, and you'll help me. So she did that. So I quickly gave her my verse. Shook me up for a minute. But I got my cup of coffee, and I walked back. I sat down at the booth, and I opened up my success diary to that day, and I wrote across the page, God, thank you. The eyes of the Lord are in every place, beholding the evil and the good. And God, I'm very grateful that at that moment that young lady walked up to me. I wasn't doing something stupid and foolish. And I could have been. Men and women, we are always on display, not only to God, but to people all around us all the time. So use that, capitalize on it, live the right way. For instance, what kind of a citizen are you? Do you obey the traffic laws? Oh, sure. Did you pick up litter? All the time. Had my kids in a restaurant a while back, and as we sat down and we were waiting for the waitress to take order, noticed the napkin lying on the floor. It was in a Denny's restaurant. So I said to the family, I said, how long do you think that napkin will lie there before someone bends over and picks it up? So they all, you know, 10 minutes, 15, a few minutes, whatever. We watched that napkin for the better part of a half hour. All it did was move. People would kick it out of the way. They'd move it with their feet. Wouldn't bend over and pick it up. I said, kids, you know why we have a litter problem in the world? The stubbornness and the vanity and pride of man. And they're all walking by here saying, I ain't getting paid to pick that thing up. It's what I'm paying this waitress for. And she's just as busy as can be. I said, now are the Lewises going to go through life that way? Or can the Lewises bend at the waist and pick up litter? So in the back of your mind you say, yeah, but then I'll spend my whole life picking up litter. Well, the way mankind has fouled up God's creation, that wouldn't be such a bad objective anyway. Wouldn't be all that bad. If God wants to keep litter out of your way and my way, he could do that. But we can also bend at the waist and pick some of the stuff up. I was checking out a conference ground one time for a conference, and this manager of this convention center was taking me around, showing me these various places. And a long time before, God had worked in my life on this issue of litter and things, and so I picked up this, or I picked up that, picked up a few other things. And we got back to the office, and I bent over, picked up a paper cup that someone had thrown down, and I reached and opened up the door for this woman, and she says, I wish you would stop that. Stop what? She says, you're always picking up things. You're just like the boss of this outfit. Everywhere he goes, he picks up trash. And I thought, lady, that's why he's the boss, and you're where you are. He's trying to be responsible. Well, discipline exemplary. Be an example. Fairly. Without partiality. Do not play favorites. Boy, that's so easy to see violated. He's my firstborn, or she's my firstborn. And begin to play favorites with the kids. Boy, work against that. Don't let that happen. And don't let grandma and granddad do it either. Help them. Be fair. Work at being fair. Progressively. Line upon line, precept upon precept, here a little, there a little. With that principle in mind, disciplining progressively, I do not let grandparents or babysitters punish my children. Nobody, but nobody, punishes my children but me or their mother. The only time I would let someone else do it would be if it were a grandparent living with me. For instance, I mentioned earlier that I want to see everything. Well, I've got the babysitter there, the grandparent there, and naturally they see so many things that my little critter's doing and doing wrong. And so they decide they're going to correct them for this one and this one and this one and this one. And then I end up with an exasperated, frustrated little child. Because in my process, I'm taking them from here to here, and at this point in their life, I'm working right here. And I've built on successes all the way up to this point. Now they're zapping them for something up here. And I'm not even bothering about that. And I'm not bothering about this. Progressively. So the babysitter, I let them save them from life and limb. But they don't correct them. They don't punish them for things. They remember and then they tell me. For instance, when the kids are little, I'll sit down. My wife and I are going to go out somewhere, and I'll sit down with the babysitter. And I'll say, now I expect you to tell me all that goes on. And the kids, I expect you kids to behave. You know how I want things run. And if you don't, she or he are going to keep a list, and I get the list when I come home. And then it's judgment day. I have more of a problem with babysitters than I do with my kids on that one. Because the babysitter thinks, oh, I don't want to tell that big, mean guy. Look at how ugly he is. He's so mad when he gets upset. I was on a trip one time with my wife and had a girl staying with our kids. And I'd gone through this routine with the kids. So when I came back, it was my birthday, and the kids decided to surprise me with a party. So I walk in the door, banner, you know, da-da, and all that. Sit down, Dad, we got a play we want to show you. And so I sit down. So
my boy Eric plays Eric. Andrew plays Andrew. They're at that stage in life where they're fighting a little bit. Leslie, the girl that lived with us, played the babysitter. I mean, Amy played the babysitter, Leslie. Scene opens up. Eric comes tearing through the room, and Andrew's tearing after him, and they're fighting and rolling on the floor and screaming and hollering. And Amy comes flying in as the babysitter. Oh, Eric, stop. You know your dad doesn't want you to fight like that. Andrew, please stop. I'm going to have to tell your dad. I'm writing this down. I'm going to tell your dad when he gets back. Please stop. Oh, please. I'll give you ice cream and you stop. I won't tell your dad. Please stop. I don't want to have to tell your dad. There Leslie stands just flush from the crown of her head to the tips of her toes. The kids had her figured out. She didn't want to tell dad. I still do that to this day when I come home. I'll talk to either the mom, or I'll talk to the if it's a babysitter caring for the kids. I want them to know that men and women, I say what I mean, and I mean what I say. It's the way God deals with you and me. He says what he means, and he means what he says. So as parents, we can establish that concept in the minds of our kids. Discipline persistently. You have to keep after it and after it and after it. Over and over and over again. And just about the time you think you've got it all together and they're doing so well, they go into puberty. Or as it said in that George Scott movie some time back, he's in P.U. Birdie. And then it all comes unglued. They didn't need a sense of humor then. Discipline clearly. Say what you mean what you say. Use words that they know. Use words that they understand. A while back, I was with one of my friends, and we were looking out the window of his house out at the yard, and he was instructing his boy on what he wanted done. He began to tell the boy, I want you to go out and do this and that, and then I want you to secure the area. When you have the area secured, then do thus and so and thus and so. And the boy said, yes, sir. And he started to walk away. His boy's about 7 or 8. I said, so-and-so, what does the word secure mean? I don't know. I mean, his dad had focused all that instruction around the word secure. Secure the area. And that poor little critter didn't know what he was talking about. And how many times you and I do the same thing? I used to violate that. I'd come out of the Marine Corps and I'd say to the kids, get in there and square that room away. Well, what in the world does that mean? I got to tell them what it means to square the room away or to pick up the room or whatever. Communicate clearly. The Bible says children obey your parents. Well, they must know what you want so they can obey. And then my last one, prayerfully. Discipline prayerfully. Remember that you do not stand alone. God's on your side. God wants to help. Now let me give you a list of things that you can pray for your kids. You can also pray them for yourself. You can pray these for your children before they come. You can pray these for your kids while you have them, even after they leave you. Number one, that they would be teachable. That they would be teachable. Proverbs 15:31. The ear that hears a reproof of life. Number two, pray that they would be pure. Personal holiness. For there is a tremendous promise in Proverbs. He that loveth pureness of heart, for the grace of his lips, the king will be his friend. God has fantastic promises for the pure. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they'll see God. So pray that your kids, your sons and your daughters would be pure. Have a hunger for personal holiness. Three, that they'd be honest. That they would be honest. That they'd be men and women who are characterized, like in Psalm 15 where it says, he who swears to his own hurt and changes not, they give their word, and their word is very precious. And if they say they're going to do something, even if it works out to their disadvantage, they're going to do it because they gave their word. Good name is rather to be chosen than great riches. Fourth, that they would be industrious, that they would be hard-working men and women. Proverbs again says, "Seest thou a man diligent in his business? He'll stand before kings." Not only do you need to pray that they would be committed to that, you be committed to it. You love to work. Throw yourself into it. Don't go around saying, "Oh, I can't stand it. Can't stand going to work," or whatever, and moan and whine and murmur. Baloney. Give yourself to it wholeheartedly. 5, pray for humility. 6, pray for generosity. 7, pray that they would be servants. 8, pray that they would have compassion. 9, pray that they would have endurance. That they would hang in. 10, pray that they would have discretion. And then 11, pray that they would have self-control. You can pray that for your kids. You can pray that for yourself. Use it as a checklist in your own life. Are you generous? Are you committed to the principle that says God's always given you enough to be generous? Irrespective of how much you have enough to be generous. Have you committed yourself to being a servant of humanity? You're going to honor God in the inner man and serve humanity in the outer man? You look for opportunities to serve? Remember, your kids are always watching you. Somebody's always watching you. Some of these things, it's so hard to know whether or not you're getting it across to the kids. Let me read you something. For one of my birthdays, my wife created a questionnaire. Well, and had a party. The kids, we got a questionnaire from each of the kids. That was their present to me. One of the things I often wondered is, am I getting the idea of working across to my kids? That I enjoy working. One of my sons said, "Well, my dad has a free weekend, he likes to work. When I'm all grown up, I would like to blank just like my dad." And this son said, "I'd like to work just like my dad." Now that motivated me because I think I'm getting it across to this boy. One of my sons has got a sense of humor. I was in the Marine Corps. One of the questions was, if my dad were given $1 million, he would. One of my boys said, "Buy a fleet of Cessna 150s for MAF, Mission Aviation Fellowship, in remembrance of Chesty Puller." Chesty Puller was a Marine. One of the questions was, "My dad would be very happy if I grow up to be." Now, I know exactly what I want my kids to grow up to be. Specifically. And this boy said, "My dad would be very happy if I grew up to be a man." And this boy said, "My dad would be very happy if I grew up to be a good man." My daughter said, "My dad would be very happy if I grew up to be a good lady." And that's exactly what I want for them. It's exactly what I pray for them. That my sons will be men to the glory and honor of Christ, and that my daughters would be women to the glory and honor of Christ. They can be plumbers, ditch diggers, I could care less, so long as they're men of God and women of God. Men and women. Proverbs 22:6. Train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old, he'll not depart from it. Or another one says, when he reaches the age of maturity, he'll not depart from that training. My point here, when the writer says train up, I think it presupposes a process. You know what you're doing. Another cross-reference would be 1 Thessalonians 2, verses 11 and 12. "You can remember how we treated every one of you as a father does treat his children, teaching you what was right, encouraging you, and appealing to you to live a life worthy of God, who is calling you to share the glory of his kingdom." I think the apostle suggests a process and a product for his training. There's a process of training, and there's a product in view, a goal. His process is that he would urge them encourage them, and warn them. Urge, encourage, warn. His product is that they would walk worthy of God, that they would be a responsible member of the kingdom of God. If you're a responsible member of the kingdom of God, you will walk worthy of God. You'll carry your share of the load. You'll do those things that bring honor and joy to the heart of God. Ephesians 6:4, bringing up your children in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. And I think there's a process suggested there. The nurture of the Lord, the admonition of the Lord. Now let me give you three definitions. A definition of love. A determined act of the will that seeks the other's highest good. Discipline. To train or develop by teaching or instruction. Punishment. The deliberate infliction of some form of pain in order to teach the differences between right and wrong. Our objective is to raise our children to walk in the path of righteousness. We discipline them in the path of righteousness. Discipline requires their voluntary cooperation. They must cooperate. When they leave the path of righteousness, my objective then becomes the infliction of some form of pain to get them back on the path. See, a principle of life is that the world inflicts pain for willfulness and foolishness. So I want them on the path of righteousness. So I inflict the pain to get them back on the path of righteousness. That's my punishment. Proverbs 22:6, train up a child in the way that he should go. Another translation says, train up a child in accordance with his original bent. The bent of the child. And children have a bent in three ways. They're bent toward evil, generally, because of the fall of Adam. We're all born with that evil nature. They're bent toward evil specifically because of some inherited characteristics or traits from the grandparents. And then they're bent toward good. They're bent toward good by God. It's an illustration of God's mercy toward humanity. Oliver Wendell Holmes made this statement in terms of the impact that our ancestors have on us. We are the stagecoaches in which our ancestors ride. We cannot choose the passengers, but we can decide who holds the whip. We were having Thanksgiving dinner some years back, and a Norwegian was in our family visiting for a week. One of our reps over in Norway named Dagfinn Sæther. We entered into a discussion. Got pretty heated around the table. The kids were there, the guys that lived with us, the girl. And all of a sudden, Dagfinn looks down at my end of the table, sticks his chubby finger at me, and he says, you're a trunder. I said, what does that mean? He said, well, that's what we call people from the area of Trondheim, Norway. They're stubborn, just like you. Just like you. Well, men and women, that's where my grandmother's from. Doctor didn't know that. I'm just like my grandmother. There's a good sense of that and there's a bad sense of that. My point is that we do have some things that we inherit from our grandparents. You can see it in Isaac. You can see it in Jacob. Right on now. The mercy of God moves in, you know, and stops it. Otherwise, it would go on ad infinitum. So we're bent toward evil generally, specifically, and we're bent toward good. For instance, a bent toward good. Your children will come into the world, and my children came into the world with a real desire to please their parents. Now, it's there. It needs to be fueled, developed, but it's there. Colossians, it says, "Fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, lest they lose hope of ever being able to please you." That's how we exasperate our kids, when we never let them please us. We never let them know they're satisfying us. That's why you don't work on everything at once. You start and you go from success to success to success to success, so that they know they're pleasing you. I'm doubly committed to the reality of that premise by virtue of the 7 foster children we've had. Every one of those foster children had that characteristic. It was easy to me to be committed to it when it was just my kids. But all of a sudden I bring other people's children in there, and it's there. And I've seen those little come in monsters, and I mean monsters. Where some homes they've been in, they would cut up their clothes, put them in a pile in the bedroom, and urinate on. And within just a matter of weeks, become sweet little critters. Because all they needed was just some firm instruction, some consistent discipline, and the awareness that they were pleasing. It's there. That's a bent toward good that God gave every little child. Okay, let me keep moving on. The objective of your training should be that they would walk worthy of God. You're training them, I'm training my children, for service in the public eye, not in private. For service in the public eye. That's the whole thrust of Solomon's Proverbs. Service in the public eye, serving people. And when the apostle says, urge and encourage, I think he's talking about precept and practice. Precept and practice. Some years back, we decided that we wanted to teach our kids what we did to them, why we did it, and how we did it. I felt like most folk, you know, when I grew up, that no one ever taught me how to be a good parent. So I went, am I going to go do the same thing? Launch my kids out in life, and they don't know what to do? No, that would be wrong for me. So I decided I'll give them a path. I'll let them know what, why, and how. What they do with that information is their responsibility. It's mine to make sure that they're equipped. They need to know what to do, how to do it, why to do it. So then Janice and I worked on a little thing we call our training box. Our little disciples. Okay, centers around 4 things. The task, the direction, the limiter standard, and the enforcement. 3 aspects of it deal with communication. Say what you mean. I urge them and encourage them in this arena here with my task, my direction, and my limits and standards. I say what I mean, and I mean what I say. The enforcement aspect is that, I mean what I say. We utilize this in almost every area. In fact, the family guideline is this. I'm on the road, Janice is home with the kids. My daughter Amy, who's 16, will say, Ma, how about thus and so and thus and so? Can I go and do this? And Ma's response will be, what has your dad said? Have you and Dad talked this thing through? What has Dad decided? Well, I haven't talked to Dad about it. Well, then it's no. Doesn't have to be any whining and wrangling. It's no. Dad hasn't spoken to it. If it's important enough to demand an immediate decision, then we call Dad long distance, wherever he is, and we talk it out. Makes it very, very easy for my wife. She didn't have to argue and fret and worry and strain. Very simple. What did Dad say? That means the responsibility rests on me in part to make sure I'm communicating with the kids. And it also teaches the kids as they get older, they have a responsibility themselves to communicate to me. I'm not a mind reader. I'm not sovereign. I can't look into their heads. So they have the freedom. If it's very important, they can call me wherever I am. And I got a call one time in Malaysia. And they have that kind of freedom. In all the years we've been operating on this, about 5 years now with the kids, the older ones, they have never violated it. Every time they've called me, it's been legitimate. They have never taken advantage of it. Now they may, but at this point they haven't. But it makes it real easy for my wife.